Hello and welcome to the Taff and Daff podcast, the first episode where we're previewing the season and the opening game for Glamorgan. With me is Peter Miller, Taff and Daff writer, and also Jonathan Doidge, who were giving us a Yorkshire perspective for this opening game. So, gents, let's get cracking. County cricket just around the corner. First week in April, it almost feels like no one's going to be ready for it, but it seems to come round this way every year. Peter, do you have any excitement in watching cricket in Cardiff in probably dreary weather on April 3rd?
Yeah, I mean, I'm looking forward to it. It'll be great. It's fantastic. There's Division One cricket in Cardiff, right? People have been crying out for this for 21 years, and here it is. Whether or not the team is ready to play Division One cricket, given that they've not done a huge amount of business in the off season, remains to be seen. But I think you have to be excited at the prospect of Division One cricket in Cardiff, right? I think Glamorgan, if you were to ask them, would say that they think they should be a Division One club, given that they're an international ground, et cetera, et cetera. So yeah, looking forward to it.
And Jonathan, I know you're a very busy man in the couple of weeks leading up to the season, but you're making the trip down as well. Is that right?
I certainly am. Moving house, launching my own version of what you're doing, White Rose Files on Monday the 30th, moving house on Tuesday the 31st. 48 hours to unpack boxes and get in the car and drive down there. So it's going to be an interesting few days, I can promise you that.
Well, we'll come on to Yorkshire expectations for the season later on, as we will with Glamorgan. But I guess the one thing we've got to talk about, I mentioned the date of the season, and there's a lot of talk. Everyone has their opinion on when county championship cricket should run, but it's no surprise in saying it's been a very wet winter. No one's really sure what the pitches will be like. Glamorgan have had a pre-season tour cancelled where they were hoping to go to Oman, and they're only just getting back outside, so no one will really be sure whether they're ready or not. Peter, how do you, as someone who's covered Glamorgan quite a lot and spent a lot of time there, pitches don't tend to be very seamer friendly. Do you think we could see a difference first game if it's wet and soft?
Yeah, I think the stuff about, it being hard to bat in the county championship in April and May is a little bit overblown, to be honest. It wasn't that long ago that Sam Northeast was scoring 400 in April for Glamorgan. So I think we'll see. It would be interesting to see what kind of pitches Glamorgan want to have, right? Bearing in mind that I'm sure we'll talk about this, that their seam bowling options are pretty thin on the ground. I think they're probably a better spin bowling side in that they've got Mason Crane and Ben Kellaway. But it will just be interesting to see whether or not they think it makes sense for them just to have pitches as flat as possible, try and get as many draws as possible, get some runs on the board, given that they've got a reasonably strong top six. Or if they go the other way and think, do you know what? We don't have the world's greatest bowling attack. Let's roll the dice and see whether or not we can actually create some seamer friendly pitches, which, as you've quite rightly said, I mean, what's tended to happen in Glamorgan is that it's tough to bat in the first session of a county championship game, and then by days two and three and four, like, we've got quite excited, haven't we, over the years, Blake, at the prospect of getting potentially day four off, and then all of a sudden it's an absolute road and you're watching the game peter towards a draw. So that'll be interesting.
And Jonathan, the Yorkshire attack looks like it will be one that looks to seem to do the damage. As someone who I'm sure has watched plenty of cricket at Cardiff over the years, I suppose getting this insight may be of kind of use to when you're on commentary. But term often used in the press room is new ball pitch tends to be Cardiff. It does that bit, as Peter mentioned, in the first session and then dies out. How do you think that will suit Yorkshire?
Well, if they bowl well, it'd suit them pretty well. Ben Coad, who I would say wasn't his best last season for Yorkshire, wasn't sort of a million miles off it, but he's been so effective over the seasons. And Jack White, who came in, who was extremely effective, and then the main backup man, and it probably sounds disrespectful to call him that, was George Hill. Who was taking wickets for fun, 50 odd first division wickets at his first real go at bowling Division One, because he wasn't bowling that much when he'd first started his career when Yorkshire were back in Div One. 50 odd wickets at 15 was an exceptional effort. He's just a very difficult bowler to read, I think, as a batter, facing a 77 mile an hour seam bowler. he's just one of those typical county cricket bowlers. Give him a bit of grass to work with, and he bowled exceptionally well. So yeah, I think if they can use that new ball well, then they could find a bit of joy. But I mean, I can remember speaking to Peter. Oh, what would it be when Otis Gibson was in charge? Probably 2024, when I was down there, and we had a match where it developed into a bit of a joke on the final day because, I think the three of us, with our eyes shut, trying to bowl, with the batters with the eyes shut, I should say, not facing us, would still have struggled to take wickets on the pitch. It was horrendous. The back end of that game. And he just developed into a farce with people like James Wharton having a bowl and stuff like that. I'm not sure if Johnny Tatts, I think he took his pads off as well and had a bowl with his leggies. So it was that type of a situation, which is unfortunate, isn't it? Because we want to see results in cricket. And to that end, if I can just go on a little bit longer, because you brought to mind what happened last season when Mags, Anthony McGrath, took over back at Yorkshire, and he wanted grass leaving on the pitch at Headingley because. Unbelievably, after the history of Headingley that I grew up watching, where it was always a result pitch, it's been very, very difficult to force results there in the last few years, and there's been a lot of draws. And he wanted to take the gamble. We're going to leave plenty of grass on. We'll back our bowlers to take wickets. But and it's in some ways it worked, and in other ways it backfired a time or two as well when we were under severe pressure because of what the opposition were producing. So you pay as your money and all that. And I think, if they had their way, they'd obviously fancy turning up first game of the season, seeing some grass on the pitch down at Cardiff, and having a good go. We'll see.
Yeah, there has been some times where it's just got so slow and so low and so difficult to get anything out of it that the bowlers that have ended up being impactful at that stage are the point of difference bowlers. I remember watching, I think it would have been the 2021 season when Ollie Robinson was doing really, really well for Sussex, and he was unbelievably difficult to face because he had that little bit of extra pace, that bit of extra bounce. So I think that's the concern, I think, for Glamorgan. If you look at that bowling lineup, it's all pretty, I think Tim van der Hoogten's probably the quickest of the bowlers, I would say. But he's obviously never been tested in Division One. He's got a fantastic record for Glamorgan. He's taken 300 wickets at 27 for Glamorgan since he first arrived, having basically not really played first class cricket, having turned out a bit for New South Wales and for the Netherlands. And I think it will be really interesting to see how he does. And I think the two games when Glamorgan have Nathan MacAndrew in May, June time around the blast will be interesting because, again, I think he gives you something slightly different and won't be something that you've seen before. But I think it will be difficult for Glamorgan against a batting lineup that's as strong as Yorkshire or the other teams in Division One to be looking to take 20 wickets when you've got Jamie McIlroy and Andy Gorvin bowling 78 to 82 mile an hour seamers that don't do a huge amount. So I think that for me will be the interesting point of this season. And as you said, I quite like that, Jonathan. I like the idea of just going, we'll have result pitches. We'll leave some grass on, we'll see what happens. It will just be interesting to see whether Mark Wallace, Richard Dawson, and the rest of the Glamorgan think tank have a similar view to it, or if it's going to be much of a muchness as what we saw over the last couple of seasons.
Yeah, Jonathan, you mentioned the pitches of Headingley. I'm sure you'll be happy for me to mention that there's still less draws at Headingley than there are at Old Trafford, but I suppose that's a conversation for another day. But with the likes of Code, you mentioned George Hill, who had such a good season last time out. Jack White had a good year. They're all those kind of metronomic bowlers who are all going to put the pressure on. And as Peter just alluded to, I think the issue Glamorgan have had and conversations we always have is, are they going to take 20 wickets? And I think Yorkshire probably seem the more likely of the two. But we just talk batting. Adam Lyth had a great season last year. Do you think he's the real spearhead of the county side with the bat?
Well, he shouldn't be, should he? Because Johnny Bairstow's played in the side, and for all we love Adam Lyth, and I purr very often when I'm commentating on the Adam Lyth extra cover drive, if you can call it a drive, but he just leans on it and his lovely flick off his legs for four or six, two of the great joys of being able to do the BBC job that I do. But Johnny Bairstow is different gravy to that. In terms of his overall cricket record, 100 test matches, and you'd have to say that Johnny was pretty good last year, but by his lofty standards, he didn't come out with a ton in a championship game at all. I know he's got the gloves and the captain's responsibilities and all those things, but you know, I'm sure he would probably have expected more of himself, Blake. So he should still be, if he gets a platform set by those top four players coming in at five, you know, you'd still expect, wouldn't you, a couple of field days for YJB. But Adam Lyth, yes, I mean, top of the order, honestly, so consistent, fantastic, you know, at his age to be coming out with 1,000. Why should he not do it again this year? I don't know. You know, he still managed 1,000 runs when they were leaving plenty of grass on at Headingley. Finlay Bean is a player who's had a good winter down under. He probably needed a good winter down under after, you know, last year when there were some challenges for him, but he did come out with a double ton in a Kookaburra game at Trent Bridge on a hybrid pitch. Then with Sam Whiteman, who I've not, I must confess, seen play to any degree at all, Doncaster born, but obviously has been living his life over in Australia. I think there's quite a lot of excitement, really, without him being a major Australian name, that he's going to be a very consistent player and he's going to be three or four. James Wharton will be up there with him, you know, one or the other. And then following that, you've got Matthew Revis, who had an absolute wow of a season last year. Certainly the second half of it, he was phenomenal. And a player who I regularly said looked like he was beginning to feel, you know, like he really belonged. You know, when a player is making his way in the game and he might have a good knock here and a good knock there, George Hill would be a case in point. But then there'll often be an innings, I can remember it with Harry Brook batting with Joe Root at Headingley once, where you just think something's just changed. And Matthew Revis saw off a game against Essex at York last year where he hit two sixes through mid-wicket. And there was just something about how he played those two shots where he stood there and said, yeah, you know, this is me. I can play. And his record last year showed that. So him at six, you know, it's looking like a pretty strong top six. George, Bessie, you know, can both bat. And then you've got, yeah, you've got the tail. But yeah, they should be scoring plenty of runs, really, with that batting lineup. And last year, you know, they did okay, but you know, maybe on occasions they did come up short. Hence, you know, they had the challenges, didn't they, for long enough about staying up in Div 1.
Well, Lyth had 400 runs more than the next best last year, despite Revis getting that average up towards 64. It sounds like there's absolutely no concerns for you. I suppose it's worth having a brief mention that Joe Root and Harry Brook are, of course, on the squad list, but probably not expected to play. I mean, we can sit here for hours and talk about the kind of ECB system and central contracts, but no concerns over the batting then, Jonathan.
I wouldn't say there's any major concerns over the batting. I'll just add that, yeah, Matthew Revis might have been 400 behind Lythe in championship terms, but when I said he had a wow of the second half, there was the List A stuff, and he batted brilliantly in that. So I would still count that, if you like, in my comment.
Well, Peter, I'll bring you back in because Billy Root had his contract renewed despite not playing too much last year. So it would be nice to see that the brother off, wouldn't it? The Root off, or albeit unlikely. I mean, but how great would it be if we could see those big test names along with Johnny Bairstow, a big test name down at Cardiff on the opening day?
Yeah, I mean, I think it would just be interesting. I mean, again, I suppose it kind of boils down to what the county championship is for, right? And I think that's a question and a debate that I'm sure Jonathan has had lots of times before. And I know me and you, Backe, have had lots of times when we've talked about what it's for, right? And I think it tries to be three different things, and I'm not sure it massively achieves either of them, right? Because it looks to try and generate interest in the game. I'm not sure it does that. It tries to generate some money for the game. I'm not sure it massively does that. And then it tries to create England players, which almost to a certain extent is that once you've made it as an England player, do you still does county cricket need England players more than England players need county cricket? I suppose is the question that you've got to ask a little bit as far as that's concerned, kind of to touch on that debate.
Can I just come in at this point? Because it's interesting you should say that. And I was doing an event with Bumble on last Thursday night, just up in the north here at Skipton. On my way to do that event with him, I was listening to his latest podcast. Not that we should particularly be advertising it for him, but Stick to Cricket, I'm sure you've all seen it. And they'd had Sam Billings on as a guest. And it was interesting to listen to what Sam had to say to the four of them about the playing for England thing and about the playing for Kent thing. So they all know, all the players, lads, you know, we all know that they know that they are still judged. It doesn't matter whether they strike at 450 in T20 cricket or List A cricket. The real judgment day in cricket is how you do against the red ball. And Sam Billings was first to admit that he said, I've played 2.5 test matches in my life. That is the greatest honour that the game will ever bestow on me. I was the first English player to win an IPL, and that was great, not knocking it, and I'm certainly not knocking the finances involved, or to paraphrase what he was saying. And he was asked, I think it was to do with whether he would rather score a ton for Kent or for whichever franchise. And he still said, there's something special for me about playing for Kent that I can't get playing for anybody else. So what I'm trying to say is, they're still in the game, and the people that actually play it, they know that. But how do we all en masse as cricket lovers, journalists, administrators, players, get to that stage where we can get people to bite on that and go with us as, let's face it, we know more about people than about cricket than the people on the outside who may be just having a go for an evening at a T20 match for a change and see what it's like.
Yeah, I mean, and that's the thing for me is, I love county championship cricket, love test cricket. It's the best that there is, right? And I think, once you fall in love with it, you're in love with it forever. But I think, just kind of to the point of seeing those England players playing in county cricket, I'm just not sure that you're ever really going to get the opportunity to do that on the regular, right? They're going to see it. Someone like Joe Root is going to see it more as a way for him to get himself match fit for England than he is in terms of necessarily wanting to win a county championship for Yorkshire, even if that's what he would want to do. Do you see what I mean? Like, that's just the economics of the game and the way it goes. So I wasn't in any way trying to take away from county cricket. What I'm trying to say is that I think as cricket as a whole, I don't think has necessarily worked out exactly what the championship is for. And I think that's a failing of everyone involved, really, in that. And I think, it's interesting when they were talking about, the stuff that's kind of come out as ever. County cricket's to blame if England do badly, but is not, if England do well, it's not the reason why England have done well, right? That pretty much tends to be the way it goes. And we've obviously had a chastening winter that's happened over the winter. And I think it's been interesting to hear some of those comments from people about how they're not 100% sure what county championship runs and county championship form does for them. So, for example, Asa Tribe, who I think will play for England this summer as a Glamorgan player, first one since Simon Jones in 2005. I think he's more likely to be selected for that from what he's done for England Lions than if he scores 1,000 runs before May. And that, I think, is, for me, doesn't make a huge amount of sense.
No, and I'll use his own my mock Lancastrian accent. But Bumble said of Asa Tribe, only on Thursday night, proper player, this lad. So he's expecting big things from him as well, and there'll have been lots of talk about that on the grapevine. And his madcap idea, not Asa's, but David Lloyd's, is to have £20 million up for grabs out of all the money that has been made out of the 100 franchises, and throw that up there as first prize for winning the county championship. In his view, that will then be an incentive for players who are wobbling and thinking, do I nip over and play in the CPL or whichever other competition may be concurrent, PSL? My county's got a half decent chance of winning this, and if I stay and play, it's got an even better chance. Let's have a go for it. I don't know. I mean, there will be a lot of questions and probably laughter about that idea, but I know what he's saying. Let's invest in the game, make county cricket better again by throwing some more prize money at it, and see how that plays out.
I don't, I mean, if there is £20 million kicking around to do it, let's do it. Whether or not the counties would agree to put that up, I think they would rather, especially those that have had 100 franchise to set. I bet they've probably got plans for it already, right? And from a Glamorgan point of view, I'm not sure that's necessarily been spent on salaries, which I think is an interesting point, Blake, to bring up as far as Glamorgan's concerned, because they had a fantastic year last year, and I don't think anyone, myself included, and I'm more than happy to say this, thought for a second that they were going to get promoted last year. I think They had a much better chance in 2022 when they probably should have been promoted and weren't after they had a blow up against Middlesex at Lord's. But I think the really interesting thing I think for me is that they've not gone out to look to try and invest outside of their existing squad, right? They've lost Sam Northeast, who's made the completely understandable decision that he wants to be home in Kent with his young family. They never moved to Cardiff with him. So obviously he's only seeing them for the winter months and then is having to be back and forth up and down the M4. But they've replaced him with Sean Dixon, and Sean Dixon has had an okay last couple of years, but has been more of a T20 than a championship player. And they haven't gone out to look to sign a big name overseas player to be with them for the start of the season. It's interesting to see whether or not do counties want to use that 100 windfall to reinvest in their squad, or do they have other plans for it as far as pathway, infrastructure? You know, there's a million things you can spend that millions of pounds on, right? And what is it they're going to spend it on? And, you know, I mean, I suppose it's interesting to ask you, Jonathan, from a Yorkshire point of view, you know, what they're going to do with the money that they've brought in from having, you know, the 100 franchise, and where you think it's going to be spent as far as Yorkshire are
Yeah, the
concerned.
newly called Sunrisers Leeds.
Yeah, catchy, isn't it? Yeah, you can imagine that marching on together to be sung as they walk out to Headingley County on a Friday night or whatever it'll be. Well, Yorkshire, obviously, from the money that they got from the deal, I think a lot of that was already spoken for in terms of debt. So, everything in the garden is rosy in the sense that that is now cleared. But it's not like they've got a fortune left to be spraying it around everywhere. I think they want to get the facilities upgraded again to ensure a test match future, because there is, make no mistake, the amount of money, and you'll know yourselves down there, that you can make out of having 5 days of cricket. Make sure you do prepare a decent pitch and don't leave too much grass on that one. Get through to day five if you can. And they know, from the previous chairman is alleged to not have applied for Test cricket. Colin Graves has alleged that publicly during his tenure in the post-racism, crisis period. And so, therefore, Yorkshire have not got a test match for a couple of seasons, and that's costing them a lot of money. So, not everything in the garden is 100% rosy in that respect. It could have been better, is what I'm saying. But they've at least cleared the debts, and they are able to move forward in that way. That, obviously, from what I understand, Sussex, for example, at the moment, aren't, and they're having their own issues to sort out, aren't they? Because I think they've got a trading loss, and you're not allowed to use the monies from the 100 to be able to clear that. Yorkshire's was an historic debt, and of course the Graves Family Trust and all that involved, so treated differently and able to use that money.
Gents, we can talk about this side of county cricket all day because there are so many intricacies and nuances. But I think we probably should return to the stuff that happens on the pitch, because we can talk about debt and the effects that Sussex have had when I ask a table prediction of you a little bit later on. But Peter, something you briefly touched on with the mention of Dixon coming in, and he's pretty much the only one other than a couple of youth graduates being signed. Have Glamorgan done enough for Division One cricket?
I'm worried. I mean, the last time they were in Division One was 2005, right? That season they played 16, lost 14, won one, drew one, right? One of the game they drew, I think, was against Sussex in Swansea, and that was when the first day was completely washed out. So I'm hopeful that they have a slightly better return than that, but it's such a big step up. I mean, Jonathan, you'll know this more than me, having had Yorkshire bounce up and down, right? The difference between Div 1 and Div 2 is vast. And that will be interesting. I mean, it would be interesting to know from your point of view what you think Glamorgan have to look forward to at their first time of going up to that level, having been in Division 2 for 21 years.
Yeah, I think they'll find it tough. It's definitely not impossible, Peter. On the evidence of what I saw last year, but you've got to expect, and Yorkshire were sort of taught lessons by the likes of Surrey last year. If you don't get it right against Notts, obviously they ran out as champions, so very, very good side. And typically Hampshire and Warwickshire are not easy sides to get past. So you've got those four to contend with, really. Sussex did have a really good start to last season as well before that things sort of dropped away for them slightly. Durham surprised me that they ended up going down. And of course, that was the game against Yorkshire at Headingley that finished the season off. So I thought they would be better. So there were teams that Yorkshire comfortably competed against, if you like, and obviously won some games. And then there were the usual suspects where they've just got that maybe one extra bowler, one extra batter, and they're just so used to playing at that level that, if you're not on your mettle, if you have a bad session against any of those teams, then that can ruin you. I mean, I can give you a very, very strong case in point. I'm going to have to go in a minute or two, lads. So apologies in advance. But the first match of the season last year was a rude awakening for Yorkshire down at Southampton. I went into that with looking at the squad list, thinking, yeah, they've got, half a chance of winning this if they bat well. And they lost a load of wickets in the very first session of the season and were chasing the game from that point. They ended up losing the match by 5 wickets. And when you look back over as it turned out to be a 3-day game, that one, and you just a little tweak here and a little tweak there and a little one there. And I came away thinking, well, they've lost this game, but actually I'm optimistic that barring that disastrous first session of the whole lot, they've got the sort of tools that could make a bit of an impact. I think consistency, we know, is always the key in 4-day cricket, whatever level you're playing at. It becomes more so back up in Div 1. But I certainly wouldn't be saying to the Glamorgan lads that they're going to need to go up there in fear. Go up there and play, And I think, as Mag said with Headingley last year about leaving the grass on the pitch, we want to try and make Headingley a fortress again. If you can make, Cardiff a fortress and make it difficult for teams to come there and win, then that's a good start to things, isn't it? And try and put a couple of teams away there and then get what you can from the away matches. I think that's big key. So, you mentioned a couple of quality spin bowlers. I know that, from being down there previously, the likes of Mason Crane and Ben Kellaway with his which hat, arm or leg is he going to bowl with next? They've got a couple of useful tools, if you know what I'm saying there. I don't mean that in a derogatory
Oh, no,
fashion.
not at all. Not at all.
In the side, as well as Tim van der Hoogten, who I think will go fine. Consistent bowler, but you do need obviously a few more options. Yorkshire's point of difference would probably be George Hill, because when he hits the seam, nobody seems to know where it's going, probably least of all George at times, and that confuses batters.
Yeah, and
But
I think Tim will be great, but Leo, it's kind of the point I suppose I was going to go on and make really was just that my concern about Glamorgan's less around that top six, which I think is pretty strong. Like, I don't think that's a million miles away from being a Div One top six. You've got Colin Ingram, who had an amazing year. Asa Tribe, who I think the only reason that it will be an issue for Glamorgan is if he is picked for England and he isn't around as a result. Kieran Carlson, I think, has an opportunity to really show people what he can do, because I think he is a properly class player and underrated
I
by
agree.
England and everyone else. But bowling, I worry. I just think there's a lot of the same stuff that's being sent down, and that's my concern for Glamorgan. But that was my concern for Glamorgan last year, and they started off terribly and then didn't lose another game until they got promoted. So, who knows? That's the great thing about sport,
Jonathan, I'm wary you have to go. So just before you do, can I just get from you, Yorkshire finished 7th last year. They were in kind of a relegation scrap for a little bit and then managed to set themselves aside from the rest beneath them. Are they doing better or worse than that this year?
Oh, better. I think no excuses if they don't. Those young lads have got an extra year of experience and a very vital now year of first division experience under their belts. And the ones who you'll see play this year, you can probably list them yourselves on a team sheet coming down to Cardiff in that first game. They should be better, shouldn't they? And so with the experience that they've got around that, I've been saying that, top three would definitely not be out of the question for Yorkshire. Like always, they have to play well, but I think they've got the ingredients there to make an impact, and maybe just not one of those top four teams I mentioned that are up there on a regular basis off their perch, whoever that may be. If they play really, really, really well, they may knock two of them off, Championship might still be a step, you know, too far. But you're never going to rule that out, are you? If you had an absolutely zinging season where Johnny Bairstow's whacking tons on the back of some really good opening stands. But I think, yeah, top three is, you know, not unrealistic.
Okay, well, we look forward to it. That should be a good test for Glamorgan. But thank you for joining me, Jonathan. So, Peter mentioned the batting and how you think that is really the key to Glamorgan success and the bowling. We could go on for hours to talk about and kind of decipher what the best options are. What do you think they need to do in order to avoid relegation? Because they've been helped out by Sussex starting not only with their bank, but with their points total as well in the red. So that makes survival a little bit easier. But what do they need to do to make sure that they don't go back
Yeah,
down?
if you're going to stay up, you need to win games. And to win games, you need to take 20 wickets, right? Which is what we've been speaking about, you know, over the last little while, being little nerdy people talking about Glamorgan County cricket, little WhatsApp conversations. So that's what they need to do. They need to find a way to try and take 20 wickets. And I think it's interesting when you've got the what the team's going to look like, right? This is the debate that we were having about what the starting 11 looks like, right? Is it that you're going to say, I mean, you know, I think both of us agreed Kellaway's nailed in to be batting middle order with his left arm and right arm spin bowling, right? So is he your spin bowling option with Carlson potentially bowling some spin as well? And then as a result, you need to then look for bringing in another seamer. So is that Dan Douthwaite that gets a game? You know, I don't know. You know, who's that player that comes in to kind of fill that role? Is it Andy Gorvin? I don't know. And then, or do you just say, we're going to play our best 11 and our best 11 has Mason Crane in it and Mason Crane plays and we'll see how he goes. So, you know, I think that for me is, you know, regardless of the order that they end up coming in at, you know, I would say the top seven is pretty well nailed down. And then I think it becomes a more interesting debate as to who the other four are that round out that team. So, you know, if you did go from those bowlers, Mason Crane as one of those four players that's going to play, that then leaves you with three seam bowling options for a county championship game that's starting at Easter. You know, that's it's you know, it's a big ask, right? So is that the best makeup? I'd be interested from you who watched last year having handed on the baton as far as sitting in that press box all of last summer watching Glamorgan play, although I was there watching it on my iPad in my office. Is that how the team looks? I mean, one, do you agree that that's going to be the top seven? And two, what do you think is going to be the bowling lineup?
Yeah, I absolutely agree that the top seven writes itself. As you said, the order of which they come could be interesting to see. And they've got a friendly, as we're recording this, next week, which would have already been played when this comes out. So we'll see, I guess, the what the intention is. Tribe, when he did come in the side last year, did open the batting. Of course, with Zainul Hassan, who we've not even mentioned, but we will probably assume that Byron will take the other opening spot again. But he may well bat at three. He had success for the Lions this winter in the middle order. And then Ingram, Carlson, and Dixon is likely to be the engine room if Dixon doesn't go up to open. Kellaway, Cook nailed on six and seven, and the bowlers. It is an interesting one. Crane is probably underplayed. It was interesting to hear Jonathan talk so much, you know, so much praise for George Hill, who Andy Gorvin shouldn't be too dissimilar from. He's similar in pace, similar in build. George Hill a little bit quicker, but George Hill is the new ball bowler, and as Jonathan said, when he hits the seam, it, you know, it can cause anyone problems. Andy Gorvin is used in a very different way for Glamorgan. He's not that new ball bowler. He's more we'll bowl him with the keeper up and see if we can sneak a leg side stumping or try get something out of the pitch to lead to you know, catches in close, that more funky field, which will also be interesting to see. You know, Kieran Carlson may take a different direction to who I think was quite a conventional captain in Sam Northeast. So there's so many uncertainties ahead of the season, and I guess we can only really know on that opening day. I think Tim van der Hoogten will definitely lead the line. with who? I'm not sure.
Yeah, I
Maybe that.
mean, I'm team golf, right? Like, and we've had this conversation lots of times before, right? Like, I'm a firm believer that wickets are sanity and miles per hour on the radar gun is vanity, right? Like, give me wickets. That's what you want. Yeah, 20 wickets at 22 in the 7 games that he played. Yeah, took a 5 wicket haul. People found him difficult. You know, he wasn't an easy bowler to face, and I think he's quite canny, and he's one of those bowlers like my favorite cricketer of all time, 100%, hands down, favorite cricketer of all time, Adam Holyoake, right? And the reason why I loved Adam Holyoake is Adam Holyoake knew exactly what he was good at, right? I didn't try and do anything crazy or anything that he was trying to be, you know, more than he was capable of. He just knew what he was good at and he did it. And I'm not saying Andy Gorvin is the player that Adam Holyoake was, but he gives me that vibe in the way he goes about his game, right? Is that, do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I agree. I mean, Adam Holyoake was before my time, unfortunately, but
Well, this is the thing,
yeah, he's absolutely, you're absolutely right in that he knows his skill set and what he does well, and he does seem to bring wickets at times of need for Glamorgan, and he does often bowl in that role. So to average 22 is very impressive because he's often bowling when they need a bit of something different. They need a bit of luck in a way without doing a disservice to Andy, who is a very skillful bowler, but his average could certainly be far worse when bowling to quite often two set batters when Glamorgan are really rolling the dice.
yeah, and I think that will be that, you know, I think as the season progresses, and I think, you know, you have to give massive credit to Richard Dawson, who came in difficult circumstances when he was appointed to that job in January, right? Obviously, he had Grant Bradburn, who was on a 2-year contract, let go. And he came in relatively late in the day. I don't think he was in the job until, you know, 2025 had got underway. And presenting with the team, and then Glamorgan had that difficult start where they lost their first 2 games badly, and then got a fighting draw in their third and looked like they were in real trouble and it could be a terrible, terrible season. To then turn that around and not lose another game of cricket until after promotion had been secured is like fantastic. You have to give massive, massive kudos to them. And I think given that's the, you know, an unfancy team that I don't think anyone would have thought was going to get promoted last year. I don't know. I mean, I have to go back and find all of the prediction articles from this time last year. But I don't think many people thought that Glamorgan were going to be promoted, right? And I don't think many people think Glamorgan will do well in Division One, and maybe that's to their advantage. You know, being the underdogs and being the, you know, the quote unquote smaller club, and one that doesn't have that history is to their advantage. But to go back to the original point, it's just really difficult to see where they're getting 20 wickets on the regular on that Cardiff pitch where it just gets so dead. Like, just the amount of times that you've just been there going, I'm not sure where any bowler is taking a wicket on this, because and as well, it's not like teams are scoring at 5, 6 runs and over either. You know, it does tend to be very, very stodgy cricket as the pitch tends to just get a bit dead. It will just be interesting to see what that bowling lineup looks like.
As this is before the season starts, it's the only time we can ask predictions of you. So we've done the analysis of what they need to do to stay up. Question is, are you willing to say here and now that they are going to do it?
Hope springs eternal, right? I think it'll be difficult. I think you're right. I think the Sussex being short of points makes all of it quite interesting. But I think Sussex are a good enough side that they'll overhaul that relatively quickly. But yeah, I think, look at this is the problem, right? Is that you follow enough Glamorgan cricket, right? And anyone who's got this far into this podcast, I imagine, is a pretty diehard Glamorgan fan, right? Because this is really, really niche stuff, right? I think you're scarred a little bit by what Glamorgan's done to you over the years, right? It's you know, the things you love the most that hurt you the most. And I think from that point of view, I think it's quite difficult as a cynical Glamorgan follower to be thinking, no, they'll smash it, it'll be fine. I'm just not sure that's how Glamorgan fans are built, to be honest. Correct me if I'm wrong in whatever comments there are in all of this. So I think from that point of view, I think it'll be a struggle. I've obviously watched a lot of Division Two cricket, and there are times where the standard is mixed, I think. And when I have watched Division One cricket, it's been a lot stronger. And I think the point that Jonathan was making earlier on was about how the difference in better sides is that you don't have a weak player in the top six. You don't have a seamer that you can bully. They're all very, very good players. And against those top sides, I think it would be difficult. But I think having watched last season, I'm kind of a little bit more reluctant to write them off because I'd written them off after the first three games and I was proved so drastically wrong. So fair play to them. But yeah, I think it will be a struggle. Maybe they can burgle just staying up. But I think for me, as someone who genuinely cares about whether or not Glamorgan do well or don't do well, I think staying in Division One should be the target. More than that, it's an absolute bonus. If they can stay outside of those relegation zones and get two wins, three wins, and a few draws, then I think you've got to say that's a success. First target, do better than 2005, right? Which was one win, one draw, 14 losses. Let's go for that. But yeah, let's say I think they might just stay up. It's about as positive as I can be. I don't know. What about you?
Firstly, I think it'd be great that they get to play some new sides and go to some new grounds for 4 days, rather than just the kind of token T20 game that they get at a lot of these grounds across the summer. But yeah, it's all about taking 20 wickets, right? I mean, the batting will sort itself out. Eddie Byram's probably the weakest in that top seven in terms of he's struggled to kick on when he has played for Glamorgan, and obviously he's had injury issues. Saying that they have got Jai Richardson, Ben Coad, George Hill, Jack White, and Dom Best to contend with, but that'll be a sign, won't it? You know, Yorkshire finished seventh last year. If Glamorgan don't put up much of a fight against Yorkshire on the opening game, as much as Jonathan's optimistic about their chances, I think that'll really set the tone. I think 20 wickets will be important, and I think, as we said, you know, wickets are they're the gold, aren't they? And sometimes you've got to make some sacrifices in other areas to get those. So it'll be interesting to see the bowlers they pick. Crane is naturally a wicket taker. Gorvin is naturally a wicket taker. So it just all depends what they do there. But I think you're absolutely right in that if they can finish eighth, that's certainly more than success.
The other point to make at the batting, of course, is we've talked about what we think is going to be the top seven, but then you've also got Zane and Billy Root, who are more than adequate replacements to come in.
And Douthwaite, if he doesn't play the opening game.
Yeah, and Douthwaite as well, who I don't know. I mean, Douthwaite's probably a 7.5 rather than a seven or a six, right? In terms of his batting, as fun as it is to watch, right? He's like Glamorgan fans of old. I always feel that Douthwaite is someone who's got more chance of pulling off what Michael Hogan always used to do when he batted, which was just trying to hit every ball for six. And he's great fun to watch. And I think, you know, a bowler that I think probably I kind of, you know, a couple of times when I've done the ECB Reporters Network stuff and they've talked about who I think the breakout player from the Blast will be from the Glamorgan squad to potentially play 100 games, I've always kind of thought Douthwaite has that game and I think he has the skill to do well. So, you know, I think there's some squad players kicking around, but just keep looking at an attack of Gorvin, McIlroy, Tim. Just looks like it looks pretty thin on the ground, right? And it's just a worry that if one of them is injured or one of them goes or whatever, there's not a huge amount of underneath in terms of finding those 20 wickets.
Well, there we go. Thank you for that, Peter. Let's leave it there. You will be able to hear Taff and Duff give a podcast throughout the season. We'll be breaking down each game afterwards as it comes, and hopefully we'll have guests such as Jonathan previewing the upcoming games, so you have that to look forward to across the summer. And of course, all of us at Taff and Duff do want Glamorgan to do well, that should be said. And if this podcast wasn't enough, you can also read by the time this goes live. Our previews will be on the Taff and Duff website, so make sure you check out what we all think will happen there, myself, Peter, and Alid Hopkins. And again, there will be more coverage of Glamorgan across the summer, which we are all very excited for. But for now, thank you for Peter for joining me. And I'm sure you will be again throughout the summer. And also thank you to Jonathan Doig. Hopefully we get more of those from opposition journalists throughout the summer. And of course, check out White Rose Files by the time this goes live as well. But for now, thank you for listening to the Taff and Daff podcast. I've been Blake Bint. Goodbye.